Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus. Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome into one of the most unique days in New York sports. The Mets are playing for their postseason lives. We will keep you posted all day long. We got huge TVs in front of us. We'll also mix in talk about how the Jets absolutely sucked up MetLife Stadium yesterday. The Knicks made a shocking blockbuster. The Yankees are getting set for the playoffs. But we're having a big live watch party. And so far, it stinks. Because Tylor Megill gave up a two-run home run to Ozzie Albies. The Braves lead 2-0 in the bottom of the third inning. They have two on and two out with Travis d'Arnaud up. So, we are going to keep you as posted as humanly possible on this game. Everything that happens, you're going to hear it here. But we'll also mix in all the other fun stuff. But right now, just to set the mood for you, Tiki, I understand the Mets only have to win once. Mm-hmm. I get it. I understand the formula. We all do. I am a wreck because I don't want to have to sweat out a second game.
I know it.
I want to win this freaking game. I want game two not to matter very much, and I want to chill for the last 2.5 hours of this show. But right now, down 2-0 in the bottom of the third inning, I have a freaking ulcer. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Ev. But don't you think it's more interesting if you have to sweat it out for the second game?
No!
Don't you think it'll be better for your blood flow if they have to win the second game?
No!
Don't you think it'll be better if you go finish this game, say you lose? Let's just assume that the Mets lose this game.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be so nice to just have the conversation between you and I and Tommy and Sean about what are the Braves going to do in game two?
No. I mean,
are they going to bullpen it? Are they going to have a position player starting? What's going to happen in game two?
Those conversations may have to take place. I don't want to have them. Yeah. As it stands right now, Francisco Alvarez, and I love the man, could not catch a ball that was right down the middle, so it was a passed ball. And so the Braves have a chance in the bottom of the third inning to sort of break the game open. They have second and third, two outs, already leading 2-0, and Spencer Schwellenbach has continued to look completely unhittable against the New York Mets. That's the situation they face right now. And while, yes, they would get themselves a mulligan if they lost this game, and all those scenarios would certainly be talked about, who do the Braves pitch, do they try, blah, 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 and I've already had numerous people, Sean Morash has said it to me 150 times, don't worry, they couldn't possibly lose the second game. You got nothing to worry about. By the way, Tylor Megill has gotten through the third inning. He just struck out Travis d'Arnaud. So at the end of three, they're not dead yet. Though it feels like I'm dead, the Braves lead the Mets 2-0 as they go to the top of the fourth inning.
It's two runs, Evan. Eventually, they're going to start scoring. Why are you so concerned about this?
Really?
Schwellenbach got them. They're in their minds, obviously, because the last time they faced Schwellenbach, they were terrible as well. But still, this game means something. This is where this team that you've implored for months, this guy's got to step up. Pete Alonso's got to do this. Nimmo's got to do X, Y, Z. Like, this team will do it. Don't
really?
You have faith?
No, not
why,
really.
Why do we have more faith than you do?
Because you're not Met fans. That's a simple answer.
Positive Tommy over there has more faith.
He's like a machine. You put a quarter in and it'll repeat the same 10
things. Even though he's strangely quiet today.
Yeah, because even he deep down knows that there's some negativity. Look, I give the Mets credit. They responded on Sunday. They needed to win, and they won a game they had to win. But on Saturday, they didn't. On Friday, they didn't. Obviously, you go back to Tuesday against Atlanta, they didn't. And one thing about this Met team is sometimes their offense disappears for long periods of time. What is going to make this game really interesting but also a struggle is that because there is a second game, because you have that, hey, there's a second opportunity, how do you handle this game if, let's say, the Mets don't score in the top of the fourth inning, mm-hmm. Megill's pitch count is getting very high, do you go to your bullpen, and who are you going to? Are you going to high-leverage guys to keep it close because you're trying to win? Or do you actually go to lower-leverage guys thinking, hey, I got to save my top guys just in case I need to win game two? That's another part of the strategy that will be very interesting.
It is, but I think Carlos Mendoza just gave us a clue because early in this past inning, he went out after he gave up the two-run home run, he went out to the mound to talk to Tyler McGill. And you saw someone starting to warm up. I didn't catch it who it was, warming up in the bullpen.
Alex Young started the stretch. He's one of the low-leverage guys.
Well, there you go. So I think you're getting your answer right now.
Yeah, and that's what makes this game so difficult to win. You want to win this game. I want to win this game, if not just to not be stressed from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock. But I think you've got to be smart, because they do get a second opportunity if they don't win this game. They are trailing 2-0, top of the fourth inning. They've got Iglesias, Vientos, and Nimmo coming up. We will keep you posted on everything from this Met game. Now, let's get to this Jet thing. There are a lot of people that you can blame for what happened yesterday. Number one, I blame myself because I bought in. I believed. I sat here on Friday, and I said, you know what? I trust this team, and it may not be pretty, but they'll find a way. And Robert Saleh and this coaching staff, Jose Iglesias grounds out to start the fourth. They deserve a lot of blame, too. But you know who actually pisses me off the most today?
Who is that?
The guy, and this is going to shock you guys.
Go ahead.
You ready for this?
I'm waiting.
Quarterback's got to be better.
You know what?
The quarterback's got to be better.
I am shocked and impressed that you said that.
Thank you.
Because he did need to be better. Because it felt like he was affected by the weather yesterday. Now, both sides of the ledger were affected by the weather, because Bo Nix was terrible. He looked like he was shot putting the ball, trying to get it downfield, completely inaccurate until it mattered most. Mm-hmm. Really, it was the run game that got him going for the Denver Broncos. But I thought that Aaron Rodgers felt affected by the conditions. And he didn't have that confidence that you're used to him having when he's leading a team.
Yeah.
He didn't show up. He didn't make the plays that needed to be made. Some of the throws were short. The decision down in third and one on the 1 yard line before they ultimately had to settle for the field goal because they jumped offside for the 15,000th time in the game, and had to settle for three when they were on the 1 yard line at first and one, first and goal from the 1 yard line. So I think that Aaron shoulders some of this blame. It's hard to put it on him because there was so much else.
Well, look, there are, when you lose a game like that, when you lose a freaking football game 10-9 to the Denver Broncos at home.
Who couldn't get out of their own way.
No doubt. The game. Trust me, you're going to make a long list of people and instances to blame for a loss like that. And so Robert Saleh, yes, this team has been undisciplined since the day he got here. More on that later. You can rip Nate Hackett for the play calling. More on that later. You can rip the defense. I know it's crazy to say that. They only gave up 10 points. Cortland Sutton found himself as open as humanly possible on what turned out to be the difference in this game, a touchdown. So there are a lot of things that you can point to. But here's why Aaron Rodgers is the guy that I'm going to turn to first.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get to everybody else, because I expect more from him. Because my belief as a Jet fan was that when Aaron Rodgers walks through that door, everything changes. And so when you have the football in your hands in the fourth quarter, not once, not twice, but three times, with a chance to give your team the lead and potentially win the game, and you fail on all three occasions, I'm sorry. Like, to me, what was so tough to get through my head was that I thought with a real
Dan owed an unbelievable amount of money to the...
I don't know what that was. I apologize. I thought that things would be different. I thought that the Zach Wilson, Tim Boyle, even old Sam Darnold, it would be different. If the ball's in your hands when your defense stands on its head, that quarterback will make enough plays for you to win. And so thank you, Aaron Rodgers, for after the game putting the blame on himself. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate that.
Of course.
I'm not saying he was blaming everyone else. He put it on himself. But I don't think enough people are actually pointing the blame at the guy who we expect more from.
Yeah, but I think there's so many other things that could have happened.
Sure.
Whether it was the fumbles, whether it was the lack of awareness. Brees, Hall, as much as I love the guy, he had two easy, not easy, because there are decisions that are happening so fast, it's hard to say they're easy. In retrospect, when I look at it on film, it's easy to say, you know what, he should have kept this thing or cut this thing backside, or he should have bounced this one outside, or he should have run out of bounds in the 2 minute drill instead of trying to stay in bounds and forcing them to use the timeout. Those type of little things are what make differences in games that are decided by a point. So it was
everybody's fault. I agree.
It was everybody's responsibility to make those plays, to beat an inferior team, and they didn't do it. But I also feel like this team is still in a growth phase. This is only their fifth game with Aaron Rodgers. It's not like they have this long history of familiarity with each other and understanding how to perform in critical moments. And so It's a loss. It sucks. You're still 2-2 at the quarter pole of the season. So there's no reason to get alarmed except for Aaron Rodgers looked old and bothered by the weather. That's the only thing I take away from
it. The Mets went down very meekly 1-2-3 against Spencer Schwellenbach. They trailed 2-0 in the bottom of the fourth inning. They have managed against Schwellenbach one base runner through four innings. That came on one of the weirdest infield hits you'll ever see in the third inning of this game, in which Tyrone Taylor broke the baseball. He swung over it, and it looked like the baseball broke, was in foul territory, took a weird turn. Luckily, Taylor was running, and he beat it out for an infield hit, stole second base, got on third with less than two outs. Mets couldn't score him. That's all they've done against Spencer Schwellenbach. So on the bottom of the fourth inning, they trailed 2-0. All of those things are true, Tiki.
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot to lose this game. But Aaron Rodgers, to me, is the break glass in case of emergency. He's the insurance policy that when Breece doesn't have the greatest game on the ground, or Nate's play calling isn't the greatest, or Cortland Sutton finds himself wide open for a touchdown, or Robert Saleh continues to coach the most undisciplined team in the history of the NFL, or Garrett Wilson is confused. All of those things, I still think you can overcome with a quarterback. And what really concerned me and pissed me off at the end was back-to-back plays in which Aaron and his wide receiver, one time Garrett Wilson, had absolutely no idea what each other guy was doing. They looked like they had never played a game together.
But that's what comes from inexperience.
Sure.
Everybody wants to make a play. Everybody wants to be that guy who steps up in the big moment. But it takes a different kind of, experience, different kinds of type of time on task in order to do it without thinking about it. And I think that's where the Jets aren't quite there yet. And so it's hard for me to be upset with them because I know they just haven't had the hours. They haven't had the moments, the situations, this is a bad physical day because of the weather. This is an emotional challenge because of the weather. As much as you think that it's just rain and it's fine and easy, it messes with you, man.
You gotta find a way to win.
I know, but you start thinking about like, should I wear gloves or should I not wear gloves?
Well, Garrett Wilson showed that early because he had no gloves on.
Yes.
Then he puts the ball on the freaking ground, fumbles, and goes back and is like, yeah, maybe I should put some gloves on.
Yeah, so those things get in your head. So all of a sudden you're thinking about those things as opposed to doing your job well. And it affected everybody. Aaron Rodgers got frustrated. I think he was looking for Gibson down the left sideline. He wanted to throw a back shoulder throw. Gibson's just running a complete go route. It's the only time I saw him yesterday get frustrated, like physically frustrated. He's home stomping at the ground and pissed off because that was a play that gets them closer to field goal range. And ultimately, maybe they can kick and make the winning field goal instead of missing it. And so those little things aren't going to happen until they have many more days,
yes,
games, doing those type of things.
I agree with you, and that's why when Greg Zuerlein lined up, even more before Greg Zuerlein lined up for what could have been the game-winning 50-yard field goal, when the Jets, by the luck of the football gods, were given the ball back with a respite, mm-hmm, another opportunity after Will Lutz missed his 50-yard field goal, I thought to myself, all right, and this is literally what I thought, we're going to win this football game. The haters, Sean, Loogie, all you angry, bitter Jet haters, would say, oh, pathetic, what a pathetic win. And I would say, yeah, they did a lot of things wrong, but they got the victory, they got to move on, and continue to try to improve. You have to win that game. You know what I mean? Like, everything you said about the mistakes, mm-hmm, and they haven't played a lot together, I accept that. I've accepted that through the first 3 weeks of the season. It slowly has gotten better through the first 3 weeks. But you have to find a way against a team that I still think is a bad team. Tyler McGill strikes out the first two hitters to start the fourth inning, trying to keep it right there at 2-0. His pitch count's at 74. Two outs in the fourth. Top of the order for the Braves, Michael Harris coming up. You have to, when you play a bad team at home, I don't care how bad things are, Michael Harris hits one very deep to the warning track. I'm not doing play-by-play. Harrison Bader does that thing where he, like, sprints back to the spot, and he makes the catch. So a nice 1-2-3 inning for Tyler McGill. We're through four in Atlanta. It's 2-0. Can the bats wake up? Freaking bats wake up now? McGill's done a decent job. He's made the one mistake to Ozzie Albies. You've got Alonzo, JD, and Tyrone coming up in the fifth inning. It's a big inning against Schwellenbach.
Do you feel how heightened Evan is?
What?
This is insane. I don't know if I've had an energy-filled show like this from Evan in a long time. It has nothing to do with the Jets. You're masking it with the Jets.
Right.
Your heart, your blood pressure is probably at 180 over 100 right now. It's crazy how jazzed up you are.
Well, wait. my season's on the line. What do you want?
It's not. It's the Mets season.
Yes.
I know that you're a big fan of the Mets. Somehow you're scoring this while talking.
Are you impressed by that?
I am so impressed
by
this.
We're breaking down Aaron Rodgers in the first score in the first game or the game yesterday. And I look at his scorecard. Describe it to the people.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Tiki, it's very nice to be a live guest here for the Rico.
No, I was going to ask Evan if he's digging for gold because his legs have not stopped shaking the entire time. You might need to go during a break and relieve yourself somewhere. You got to relax a little bit.
I cannot stop shaking. And look, I know that it's one game and they get a second chance, but I'm very, very nervous.
It's not like Chris Sale is jumping on the mound in game two.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. You've clinched already, Evan.
Now stop. I'm going to give you one more chance to say that.
Nope.
And then I never want to hear this again.
Congratulations on clinching the playoffs.
It's okay. You are a human jinx.
No, I'm not.
What did you say the Jet record would be this season?
I did predict 16-1. I forgot about one important thing, though, Evan.
Here we go. Here comes the shot, Tiki. Wait for
it. I'm
waiting. That if you followed Aaron Rodgers' career the last 5 years, he stinks in bad weather. Ask Packer fans. So the moment it was raining yesterday, you knew you were doomed.
I think Aaron Rodgers was doomed for a few reasons. And the weather, sure, whatever. I also think the offensive line was horrific. Olu Fashanu, it's his first NFL game starting at a position he's not familiar with, right tackle. He was bad. Tyron Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrone Taylor, Tyron Smith.
I mean, everybody took turns jumping off sides. So it didn't matter.
Bro, it was the offensive line in general, not just the pre-snap penalties, but not just the big holding plays, but they didn't protect them.
How about this kid Denver has, John Franklin Myers? He looks tremendous out there.
And that looked bad, too. They couldn't use John Franklin Myers, another Joe Douglas special. So there was a lot that contributed to the despair of yesterday. And look, you want to say Aaron Rodgers can't play in the bad weather? Whatever. I'm not going to sit here and argue about stuff he did in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say he didn't play well enough yesterday, and I expect more. And that's the bottom line. You're Aaron freaking Rodgers. And so, trust me, we will rip Robert Saleh a little bit later on. We will rip, you will certainly, Tiki, because you broke it down with film, Breece Hall. There will be plenty of rips going around for them to lose this game. I expect that when the quarterback has the ball in his hands three different times in the fourth quarter with a chance to win a game, he's going to make enough plays to pull that off.
Yeah.
That's what I expect.
That's what he's paid to do. That's what he was brought here to do. And football is never pretty. It's never perfect. It's always going to come down to one or two plays in a game. I know it's hard to say that when each side is running 60-plus plays, but it's always going to come down to one or two plays. The Jets didn't make any of those plays.
No doubt. Pete Alonso begins the fifth inning with a base hit to left field. It's funny with Pete, who gets a lot of crap, and I get why. He has not come up big this season. He's not had a clutch year. Pete Alonso on this road trip has had one at-bat with runners in scoring position. That's it. It seems like Pete always comes up leading off an inning, but in a case like this, with the Mets trailing 2-0 in the top of the fifth inning, a leadoff single is a big one. So the Mets bring the tying run to the plate. J.D. Martinez, who got the start today and has looked better. His first out was actually one of the hardest hit balls of the game. Hit a line drive deep to center field that was caught by Michael Harris. He had a couple of hits the other day. J.D. Martinez is up with the Mets trailing 2-0 against Spencer Schwellenbach in game one of this doubleheader. We will take your calls throughout the day, whether it's your emotions during this Met game, whether it's reaction to the absolutely putrid and disgusting loss that the New York Jets faced yesterday at MetLife Stadium. That toll-free number is 888-808-1019. I do give Sean Morash a little bit of credit. Sean, in trying to contribute to our audio watch party, not only brought food, he brought Grimace-styled food, and that is chicken McNuggets from McDonald's.
You're good.
So thank you very much for that.
Yes, so stop grimacing and enjoy the game.
No, Jesus.
Sorry you're here.
We also brought in homemade quesadillas from Abuelo, so everybody can have a piece of that chorizo quesadillas.
Thank you, Abuelo.
Also, Odyssey.
No. Gracias, Abuelo.
Oh, gracias. Abuelo.
Yeah, you know Spanish, right?
Yes, 99 of my regions.
There you go.
Roll the R, though. Gracias.
Gracias.
Yeah, Abuelo. Close.
It is amazing chorizo quesadillas. It's the only thing that's calming me right now because I am very stressed. And deep down, every Met fan is stressed, too, because, yes, your brain tells you if they lose game one as J.D. Martinez dunks a base hit in a center field. So the Mets have a little itsy-bitsy rally going here in the fifth inning. Two on and nobody out for Tyrone Taylor. We're keeping it right here. We're not going to any commercial breaks. Right. We're going to stay right here and find out if this Met offense can actually respond here in the fifth inning. But let me just finish that point.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was.
You were talking about chorizo calming you down.
Oh, yeah. So even though Sean and Keith McPherson, Keith, you still here? Keith, my man. Mm. Keith said the same thing to me. And I appreciate it. Because at least in Keith's case, maybe not your case, it comes from a nice place of, don't worry, you'll be fine.
You will be.
If you lose the first game, you'll win the second game. Here's what you and Keith don't understand.
Mindy trying to bunt the runners over, by the way.
Yeah, which, by the way, I'm not against with Tyrone Taylor. Get the tying runs to second and third with Alvarez and Bader. Though Harrison Bader is just an absolute mess right now.
Francisco Lindor chirping in the background. Mindy turns around and says, shut the hell up.
Is that what happened?
Watch.
Did Lindor tell Mindy, what the F are we doing? Let's not lay a bunt down. It's 2-0 on Tyrone Taylor.
I think Tyrone Taylor, by Mindy's reaction, tried to do that on his own.
Oh, you think so?
Absolutely.
I would take the bunt off at 2-0, get a good pitch to hit, and try to drive it. Taylor, unfortunately, fouled it off. But what Keith and Sean don't understand is while you're using smart logic, Mets lose this game, Braves are going to use their bullpen, you should win the second game. You don't understand what being a Met fan is. Being a Met fan means losing to the Florida Marlins in back-to-back seasons in game 162. That's what being a Met fan is. Losing games you're not supposed to lose.
Andrew, what are you talking
about? Closing down Shea Stadium with a loss. Like, this franchise has handed us so many painful moments that you can't blame us for not thinking, wow, wouldn't this be the ultimate? Not only do you lose to the Braves once, but then in a game in which they don't care about, you lose to them again 2-2 on Tyrone Taylor. Quickly make your point.
How could you throw that at me and Keith's way as Yankee fans? All I've heard all year is that you guys were the more recent team that won a World Series.
First of all, I have not uttered that. Tyrone Taylor struck out at a pitch that was buried in the dirt.
I'm a loser.
It was a 2-2 slider that was buried. Tyrone Taylor, who's been very good so far and deserves to play. I have no problem with him being in the lineup. And it was a nasty pitch. Completely fell off the table. So Taylor strikes out. They've got 2-1 and one out for Francisco Alvarez.
I got good news,
that ball started below the zone. He shouldn't have swung.
Yeah, no, it was a man. Look, it was... yes. What?
I have 6 or more strikeouts for Schwellenbach. That's 5.
So you sat here betting the Atlanta Braves, though?
Well, Evan, you are too. I might as well join you.
Yeah, actually. Francisco Alvarez taps one, and Schwellenbach makes a very good play throwing him out. So it comes down to Bader with second and third and two out. Let's have a little survey. All right?
What do we think is going to happen?
Harrison Bader was unbelievable in the 2022 playoffs for the New York Yankees. He was a postseason hero to the point where a lot of Yankee fans said, how can we not bring him back? And this guy's amazing. They did bring him back. Obviously, things didn't go well in 2023. Harrison Bader, for the first 4 months of this season, was an incredibly clutch player. I'd argue he's one of the more clutch hitters the Mets had. Go back to early this season against the Cardinals. Got a big hit, down 0-2, down by a run, bottom of the 10th inning. He came through. It is impossible, though, right now, to have any faith that Harrison Bader, who came up with a runner on third and less than two outs in the third inning and tapped out the third base, there's very little confidence that I have that Bader's going to come through.
Two out single down the right field line.
Really?
Yep, that's what I'm saying.
Spoken like a true non-Met fan. All right, Sean Morash.
I think he's hitting a three-run home.
Oh, No.
I'm just wild about
no
Harry.
All right, happening. Real quick, Loogie, before the first pitch.
Base hit down the left field line.
These guys are unbelievable. Harrison Bader did swing at the first pitch. He fouled it off.
Did you give a prediction?
Yeah. He's not driving the runs in. You want me to be specific?
Yes, specific. Is he striking out?
No, I think he's going to pop up to left field. It's going to be like a weak pop up to left field. That'd be my prediction. Why am I so? You're going to ask me this all day, aren't you?
I am, because you're putting yourself in position to just have this negativity predicted.
I think a part of why my negativity has emerged, Bader behind in the count 0-2, was what happened Tuesday in Atlanta and what happened Friday and Saturday. And I think what that did is
fastball,
it rekindled the old bad memories that the Mets have had. And so that's why I have no faith. It'll be an 0-2 pitch to Harrison Bader. Not doing play-by-play. I'm going to pause. Ball one.
you are literally doing play-by-play.
I'm not doing play. That's not play-by-play. I waited. I stopped myself. Aaron Rodgers, get your head out of your ass, all right?
Oh, wait, we got back to football.
No, I was trying to, like, calm myself down during this big moment in the fifth inning. Because it is a big moment.
Here, eat some chicken nuggets.
Have a nugget.
I don't want to know. I can't eat. When I get stressed, I cannot eat. True story.
This is really entertaining.
That's why
your anxiety.
You don't eat.
Real
you
time.
Do meth.
All right, come on, Harrison Bader. He fouled it off. He's battling against Spencer Schwellenbach. The count is 1-2. Schwellenbach's pitch counts at 66 through 5, so certainly reasonable. Yeah, when I'm stressed out, I can't eat. What I do, and Loogie called it early, is I shake a lot. So my feet are moving. They're tapping. Do you feel my feet tapping?
Yes, because we're on a raised stage here in the performance space. By the way, credit to everybody who showed up here. We have more people here than they do in Atlanta for this game.
That's a good point. Come on, Harrison Bader. Mets are down 2-0 with second and third, and Bader hits a little ground ball to second base. It's an easy play for Albies, and what a shocker. We're all just shocked that Harrison Bader in a big spot grounds out the second. Mets trail 2-0. We go to the bottom of the fifth inning.
Darn it.
We'll mix it. See, Tiki, can you slap him for me?
Oh, I wanted him to strike out. I need six.
I can't do it because it'll be too obvious that it was me doing it because of anger.
Right.
But he's being, what do they call those things, a troll?
A troll?
Yeah. No. Slap him in the back of his big, bold head.
I just remember you being this exact same way during the NHL playoffs. So.
Yeah, that's kind of.
Or game six, Nick Sixers.
I know. Boy,
those panther growls aren't so funny now, are they?
We'll get to your calls coming up. We'll continue to keep you as posted as humanly possible on this mega Mets Braves game. And more on what went wrong for the Jets. 888-808-1019. Plus, what does the lead dog have to say about the Knicks trading dogs for a cat?
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
21 of the last 22 times has scored. Here's Sims to throw in third down. Up the middle, touchdown, Bavaro. Mark Bavaro goes to one knee. Genuflex in prayer as a 13-yard throw over the middle answers the prayer for the Giants fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
What a day. Just your typical Monday afternoon in New York City, right? The Jets are coming off a very Jetsian kind of loss to the Denver Broncos, 10-9. The Mets are playing 161 and 162 on the Monday after the regular season was supposed to end. They are trailing the Atlanta Braves 2-0 in the top of the sixth inning. Tyler McGill, to his credit, has done a great job. Mm-hmm. He's gone through five innings. He only made the one mistake to Ozzie Albies, a two-run home run. Unfortunately, and this has been something ugly that has popped its head into the Met problems over the last week, and that is the fact that the offense completely disappears, and the offense does nothing. And so far in this game, they had two opportunities to score. They have failed on both. Spencer Schwellenbach has already gotten the first two guys out in the sixth inning, and the Mets are having a tough time breaking through against a guy that they've seen two previous times this year and have been unable to hit.
Yeah, but the challenge is that he's a good pitcher, and I know we don't know because we haven't seen him that much this season, but not only has he been good, but the Braves have not basically lost for much of the last week. What are they, five out of the last six?
Yeah, well, they lost yesterday. If they would have won yesterday, this game wouldn't have mattered to them.
But they're five of the last six. They've won. So they've been exactly what you want to be at this point in the season, which is dialed in and hot. The Mets are not.
Here's the problem with Spencer Schwellenbach and the compliments you just gave him. He's had a fine rookie season. Watch this. Look, I'm applauding.
Yeah, but he's a rookie.
Yes, he's a rookie.
Yeah, but sometimes you don't know that you're not supposed to do something well.
It's not even that. He's given up one run in 19 and two-thirds innings against the Mets. So I'm all for saying, hey, he's better than people realize. The Mets have turned him into Jim Palmer on steroids.
How is he against everybody else,
though? Not that. I mean, his ERA this season was in the high threes. He's cutting through the Met lineup easily. In fact, he just got Mark Vientos to ground out, and through six shutout innings, that's after giving up one run in seven innings in his last start against the Mets, and prior to that, back at Citi Field 2 months ago, shut them down through seven. The Met bats are lifeless. Now, granted, they're going to get a second chance if they can't come back and win this game, but this creates a very tough dilemma now for Carlos Mendoza. They're down 2-0. Do you go to your high-leverage guys to keep it at 2-0? Do you just tell Tyler McGill, look, Ty, you're probably not pitching in the wild card series anyway if we make it, so just let it out, let it all hang out, or do you go and say, you know what, Alex Young, you stink, come into the game?
No.
I think this is a very tricky spot for Mendy.
I don't think you can concede yet. It's too early in the game to concede. I think you let Tyler McGill go another inning, maybe even if he gets out of it quickly, maybe another two innings. Because he's had one bad pitch, one bad hanging slider that he threw that got taken out of the ballpark. But other than that, he's actually been pretty good.
Nah, he's been fine. I don't blame Tyler McGill.
And so the last thing you want to do right now is concede and put all your eggs in game two.
No, it's a very tough spot. There's no great answer to it. My answer would be what you said, which is push McGill.
Yes.
All right, Ty, you've done a hell of a job through five. Get me through the sixth.
His pitch counts is 80 yet?
I got to double check.
It's close, but
I'll let you know the answer. But we'll get to your phone calls, too. A lot of Jet fans want to respond to that disgrace that was yesterday, and it was a disgrace. And the thing that bothered me the most is I believed. Even when Greg Zuerlein was lining up for that 50-yard field goal, I was already thinking, this makes me sick that I was thinking this, all I could think about was what the haters were going
to
say
about
an ugly win.
Yeah.
And my response was going to be, who cares, we won. Now, let's get to your phone calls. Let's kick it off with Phil in River Edge. How you doing today, Phil?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
You know.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, my problem right now, Russ, with Saleh, and in particular the supporting staff you brought in to fill out his staff. Like, why is it every time this team tries to fortify the line with vets, their production falls off a cliff? We signed Lincoln Tomlinson. He went from a Pro Bowler to being garbage. The guys they brought in are known to be productive players, and they look mediocre. And my gripe is with Saleh hiring coaches like Keith Carter. This guy is the same guy that was hated in Tennessee. He was a terrible coach and gets hired to be the Jets' offensive line and running game coordinator. Like, Tiki, very much welcome your thoughts here, but for a team to be good, you not only need a head coach, but his supporting staff needs to be filled with talented coaches who other teams want to poach during the offseason. I mean, that's a huge problem right now, and it all starts with Saleh and his inability to bring in good coaches.
Phil, it's a good question you asked, because one of the hardest things, this is for new head coaches, and I think even maybe more challenging for veteran head coaches, one of the hardest things for a coach to do is build his staff. It's why when you get these young, let's look, darlings of, say, the Kyle Shanahan tree, they always bring someone from the staff that they were on. Like, for instance,
Ramon Laureano just did a home run off Tyler McGill with one out in the sixth inning. It's 3-0. Continue while I choke on this.
So the challenge is finding your staff if you don't have a deep Rolodex of coaches that you know and are consistent with. I remember when Jim Fossil had this issue. John Fox and Sean Payton left our staff.
Right.
Both went to, Sean went to the Cowboys and John Fox went to be the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. And replacing them became very hard for him because he didn't have the Rolodex of the next upstart or big time DC or offensive coordinator. And so that happens along the chain. No, not just the coordinators, but the running back coach, the tight end coach, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so you end up getting recommendations, but you don't necessarily know that guy.
Yeah,
you know what he's all about.
Phil brings up a point, and I was thinking about this yesterday in relation to a few areas. Guys either come here and get worse, or guys leave here and get better.
Well,
and that's infuriating, ask yourself why.
Well, hold on. Just for context with the Jets offensive line, because I think it's a little bit nuanced, and the background of it no one's paying attention to. So two of those guys, John Simpson and Morgan Moses, were on the offensive line for the Baltimore Ravens a year ago, and the Baltimore Ravens made a decision to get younger. And these two guys were, I don't want to say trending down because I like Morgan Moses. I think John Simpson's a good player. But they're getting to that point where they're starting down the hill. They're not over the hill, but they're starting to go down the hill. And so they came here, and we looked at them from our perspective as, oh, these are upgrades from where what the Jets have.
Well, they kind of are.
But they are, but the reality is they're not ascending players. And so, like, the expectation changes depending on what you need. And so when Morgan Moses gets hurt and now all of a sudden you have a first rounder and Fashanu
playing a position he's not even familiar with.
Exactly right. Starting his first game, of course it's going to be challenging for him. And so some of those issues are expected, even though we won't look at it that way because we're judging the offensive line as a whole as opposed to the individual parts that make it up.
Let's go to Rick, who's calling from Morristown, New Jersey. How are you today, Rick?
Yeah, I'm not bad. I'm just curious to know if you guys have enough ice for that champagne you got in the office.
I didn't buy any champagne. You want to know why? Want to know why? Because I'm not as confident as everybody else is that it's inevitable. Don't worry. Don't worry. Mets lose game one.
You got enough juice boxes?
Rich, don't worry. I got whiskey in my room, my office, so when they lose both, Evan can drown his sorrow.
That's what I need. That's what I need, Rick. Rick wants to call in and be douchey, and that's fine. You have every right to be. If you're a Yankee fan or you root for another team, you can put your feet up. This is a relaxing time for you. Your
douchey
stress begins on Saturday. My stress is today. But where have I ever once had any kind of overwhelming confidence, don't worry, this will be fine.
I don't know.
You want to say it to positive Tommy, say it to him. He told me, and I listened, you got to clear your October schedule. I have been scared like a child for weeks. So I'm afraid. I'll be the first to tell you. What douchey comment do you want to make before
we
move on?
First of all, not everything I'm going to say is douchey. I'm just looking around at the four of us in a performance space with a bunch of great staff members behind us. I'm thinking to myself, this was your idea. You must have had some sort of confidence you were going to celebrate a party here.
No, absolutely not. It's more that there's big games going on with the Mets season on the line, and we shouldn't ignore it. That was a radio decision, not a celebration. Do you see stuff put up for us to celebrate?
You may not see it.
Well, I have nothing to do with it. I'm the guy who's scared. Everyone's telling me to calm down.
Don't be scared. It's what you live for. It's what you watch all year for a moment like this.
No.
But I just want to cry.
I hate sports. Sports in general actually gives me more pain than joy. Look at yesterday's Jet game as a perfect example. Eddie in Rockland knows what I'm talking about. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, what's happening, guys? You know, you guys, you Jet fans, you blame Sal, you blame this. The Jets had no game plan. When it's a rainy day, you know what you use? You use your tight ends. You use your running back. And you know what you don't do against Denver? You don't run up the middle on Denver. So I guess it has to be on the offensive coordinator.
Ah, here we go. Put it on Hackett. Let's go put it on Hackett.
Well, did you like their offensive game plan yesterday?
I didn't mind their offensive game plan. It was the execution that was the problem.
Here's my problem with strategy, and you tell me where I'm wrong. And this is the one that really jumped out at me yesterday. When you have first and goal on the 1 yard line, and you've got this bowling ball known as Braylon Allen, the ball has to be in his hands at least one time.
Yeah.
And it bothered me that he wasn't on the field until third down. And then when he was on the field in third down, they didn't run with him.
Yeah, I know it.
Was the one thing that really jumped out at me and bothered me.
Yeah, that whole sequence after the first and goal on the 1 yard line, that whole sequence was, it just, Fashanu missed, which forced Breece Hall to make a decision that, looking back on it, he's going to go look at it and say he missed it. Because he had a chance to just challenge the middle linebacker. His one-on-one, I'm going to beat you and get into the end zone. He didn't. He laid into the missed block of Fashanu and it got nowhere. Second play, second and one from the one. If he takes the ball outside as opposed to cutting it inside and taking on the linebacker again, he walks into the end zone. And then on the third down, which then they flipped the ends, that was on Aaron. He missed the throw.
Yes.
They had a roll out to the right. The throw is there for Conklin. He just has to let it.
Why wasn't Braylon Allen the guy with the ball in his hands on first and second down? Breece Hall was getting shut down all game that far. Allen actually looked good.
That's not my call. Personnel is not my issue. The play call was the right play call.
But who's deciding the personnel? Executed. Who do I rip for deciding the personnel? Because that was my big issue in that. And I think that was the most important sequence of the game.
Find the running back coach.
He makes that decision?
I would assume so. My running back coach made the decision
really?
For me.
Really? On which personnel should be on the field?
I lie. I made the decision for me. So unless it was on the goal line.
I like Breece Hall. All right? I'm not burying Breece Hall. All right? I think that in London against Minnesota, I still want Breece Hall to have an opportunity to be that bell cow running back that Robert Saleh describes. I'm not giving up on him when I say this.
But there are circumstances where Braylon Allen is better suited.
And not only that, it's not just those circumstances. Braylon Allen is tough to bring down. He was averaging 4 yards per carry. So if you're going to be committed to running the ball, especially on a day in which Aaron Rodgers wasn't his best, his pass protection was brutal, Braylon Allen deserved to kind of take over that role. And it never happened.
Yeah.
That's my big issue.
I get it. I understand it. But it was two plays, and they were critical plays. The problem is that we'll remember them because they didn't happen in a moment where they needed it to happen.
That changes the game. 100%. They punch it in there. They change the game. So here's what Carlos Mendoza has done in the sixth inning of this game against Atlanta. Ramon Laureano hit a home run, put the Braves up 3-0. McGill gave up a two-out hit to Gio Urshela. And as he was about to face Orlando Arcia with two outs in the sixth inning and a runner on first, and Ty Lue's pitch count at exactly 100, he made the call. He went to the bullpen, and he's gone to one of his low-leverage guys, Waskar Brazaban, who usually is in games in which the Mets are trailing or they're up big. So he's going to try to keep this game close with two outs in the sixth inning. I would assume Brazaban hopefully gets through the sixth and the seventh inning. And it's still reasonably close if he could keep it right here. And we'll see if the Met bats can wake up against Spencer Schwellenbach and eventually the Brave bullpen. As far as McGill's performance was concerned, it was okay. 5 2/3 innings, three runs. He kept him in the game. But much like a lot of games over the last week, it is about the offense. You can't win games when you don't score any runs. Much like you can't win a football game when you score 9 points. It's very difficult to win games in the NFL when you kick three field goals. And that's the type of game the Jets tried to win. So it's 3-0 Braves. They got a runner on first, two outs. Waskar Brazoban into pitch. Let's go to Christina, who's calling from Long Island. What's up, Christina?
Not much. I just want to talk about how the Jets are such a mediocrity team that we're celebrating such minuscule things that we're willing to celebrate if they win by 4 field goals instead of 3, or that we got a fumble recovery and the entire defense with the coach runs to the end zone as if we won the Super Bowl. We had 13 penalties yesterday with 90 yards of basically on the penalty. We have Hassan Riddick who's sitting there just holding out to play. If this was Belichick's team, Hassan would have been gone. Team would have been ripped apart even if they did win that game for the amount of penalties they've committed. And yet, if we won, we would have been sitting there going, well, we won, so
No. Christina, here's what I would say. I can't speak for everybody. I can't speak for Robert Saleh, and I can't speak for every Jet fan. If the Jets would have won that game yesterday, we would have said it. They got the victory, great, but I think we still would have gone through every mistake and talked about, hey, they better clean this up. If they want to win the AFC East, they got to clean it up. If they want to be a Super Bowl contender, they have to clean it up. And there would be some deep concerns on if they ever will. So don't miss the point that if they won that game yesterday, we'd all be celebrating. I'd be happy they won because wins are important in the NFL, but it wouldn't have hidden the fact that they played like crap and they went backwards. As far as Robert Saleh is concerned, I got a lot of issues with Robert Saleh. One area I'm not going to rip him for is being excited when his defense forces a turnover.
Yeah, but that's...
Like, what do we want him to do?
I know what she's saying, though, because that gets annoying.
What do you want him to do?
I don't know.
Pump his fist and move on?
Yes. Yes. It is a play. It is not... You haven't won the game.
No one said, but you can't be excited?
Of course you can.
That's his personality. I want Robert Saleh to be who he is.
But does everybody have to be excited?
Like, what do you mean?
Everybody has to run into the end zone. Everybody has to take a photo. Let's find the camera. Let's take a picture. Right? This is cool. Great. You'll never see it again. You know why? Because you lost the damn game.
You don't know that in the moment. In the moment, it's a big defensive play.
Yeah, celebrate when the game is won.
My biggest issue with this head coach is the same issue that Beningo will have when he joins us a little bit later on, and the same issue that every Jet fan deep down has. This football team, since the moment he got here, has been an undisciplined mess. You can say pre-snap. It's not just pre-snap, coach. Yeah, the pre-snap was bad, but it's not just pre-snap. You've got a veteran wide receiver doing like the, I don't know what the hell he was doing with his fingers. Whether it's a gun or not, you can't be called for dumb penalties like that.
Yeah.
You had brutal holding calls.
No, it was a gun. You get called for those consistently.
How about
it happened in our game as well.
How about the special teams play? I mean, you can't just run into a guy when they call a fair catch. Like, there was a lot of undisciplined, messy football, some of which the Jets overcame. By the way, it is now raining in Atlanta.
Yeah, messy baseball.
This would be so freaking typical for Major League Baseball, as it's 2-0, 3-0 Braves in the sixth inning, and the rains are coming down. If they got to put that tarp on the field.
That's positive for the Mets, though, because you get Schmackabacher out of the game.
That's a good point.
Schmackabacher, is that what you wanted to call him?
He won't come back in the game.
No, he won more Ks. He'll come back out.
You really bet the over on the strikeouts?
Well, yeah. Evan.
What was that total, by the way?
6 or more.
Right.
It was plus 180.
Oh, good for you. How many does he have right now? Let me look at my scorecard. I've somehow managed to remain scoring this game while we've had these discussions. Hold on, I'm behind in the count. It's 3-1 on Michael Harris. They have 2-1 and 2 outs. That's the situation. I can't believe it's raining in Atlanta.
No, it's pouring in Atlanta.
How freaking hysterical is that?
Jet fans, by the way, didn't find that funny yesterday. How many went unprepared for rain and were soaked?
Well, I looked at the forecast that morning. I didn't see a lot of rain in the forecast.
No, it wasn't. I know several people that went, and they said it was the most miserable. Nobody came prepared.
Well, because we actually look at weather forecasts and believe what they tell us. And if they tell us that it's not supposed to rain, we believe it. Waskar Brazoban gets through the sixth inning as he gets Michael Harris to line out. Mets have 9 outs to play with. They're losing 3-0 to the Braves. More of your calls coming up, 888-808-1019. We're going to shove our face with food throughout the day and keep you posted on this huge Mets game, plus continue to rip the Jets. And the New York Knicks surprised us with a big trade. What did we think? We'll give you our thoughts coming up in a little bit as well. Live from our big watch audio party, Mets Braves.